Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
And very happy to welcome Chuck Shriver to the program to talk about Pierre-André. Well, to talk about Chuck as well. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning.
Appreciate you doing this. And where in the world are you today?
I'm in Elk Grove Village.
I understand that you've known Dave Ennett for quite some time. Is that accurate?
Absolutely, yes. Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Great, Chuck. Good to talk to you.
Is that through your time with the White Sox?
Yes, and with the Cubs earlier.
Okay, great. How are you feeling about baseball this season?
I'm optimistic. Let's put it that way. You have to be optimistic.
Yes, that's exactly right. What other option is there? A little background. Chuck served as a summer replacement news writer back in, 1960?
1960, yes.
For Pierre-André. So, and Pierre-André joined WGN in 1930. I believe the radio station itself, well, originally started as WDAP, but right. I think it was 1926, the radio station itself, WGN, on the air in the Tribune Tower. So 34 years in the Tribune Tower, moves to Bradley Place, comes back here in the 80s. But you started working as the summer replacement in 1960. How old were you then?
I think I was a fast 20 years old at that point.
And Pierre-André, there's some perspective. Pierre-André is going to be installed in the Walk of Fame on Friday. Had already been at WGN 30 years.
He was like the Orion of the day.
Yeah, he actually was. That's a good point.
30 years.
Was it an intimidating place to work?
Well, yes and no. I 3 years earlier, I'd been working on a dairy farm in my dad's farm, so I was shoveling manure 3 years before I started WGN. Is there a correlation there?
There may be, yeah. We were working in Chicago News, right?
Yes.
Pierre worked for over 30 years as a host and announcer. He worked on Little Orphan Annie, Helen Trent, Betty and Bob, Backstage Wife, many broadcasts, the live dance music. By the way, Chuck, I don't know if you've ever had a chance to see some of the great old photography we have here from the 30s and 40s.
Yes,
and
I have.
Probably, I mean, those things are unbelievable.
Everybody's dressed to the teeth, and, three-piece suits and white shirts and ties and... I remember Pierre-André as being a very, very dignified man. He had a little pencil-thin mustache, and he always looked like he'd stepped out of Gentleman's Quarterly.
Well, this was kind of a it's radio, but this was an expected wardrobe, right, back in the day?
Absolutely, right.
So you were expected to wear your suits and ties to work.
That's very true.
Was that the Ward Quall era?
Very beginning of it, actually, yes.
All right, so a summer replacement news writer, what does that actually mean? What did you do?
Well, I wrote the newscast that the announcers read in those days. In those days, none of the announcers actually wrote any of their copy. They were given it to by guys in the newsroom who put it together for the five-minute shows and the half-hour headlines and whatnot. And so I replaced guys who were on vacation while I was going to school in Northern Illinois, but I was lucky to get a job there two summers, 60 and 61. And as such in 60, I think it was Pierre-André's last year. He may have retired late in 60 or early in 61. But
okay.
I would prepare the newscast and bring him into the studio and just stand there in awe and watch him read it.
So did he edit your work?
No, the announcers just read verbatim whatever you put in front of them.
That had to be nerve-wracking as a kid. What if you put something in front of them they didn't like?
You're absolutely right. The one guy that ad-libbed around was Jack Brickhouse. I would give him a script, and he would talk around it. He didn't actually read it much.
Chuck, what was one of the stories that really stood out that you were writing, like a big story of the day that you were writing and you were nervous to give to Pierre because he's going to deliver the news on the air?
Well, I don't recall if there was one. That was a long, long time ago. I'm going back in the cobwebs. But it was just fun to watch him read it because he never made a fluff. He was very smooth in his delivery, and I can remember as a little kid hearing him on Little Orphan Annie's particularly, and I would just stand there and watch him. It was just amazing. I never realized I'd be within arm's reach of someone like that.
Yeah, they were big stars, and
absolutely.
Pierre-André was I'm trying to think of a current equivalent, but Orion's probably fair.
Yeah. So,
in Orion, you must have. Did you cross paths with the young Orion Samuelson back then?
Oh yes, yeah. He probably doesn't remember it because it's so long ago, and I was just a kid. But yes, Absolutely. And then later at WGN, when I was there full-time out of Bradley Place, television and radio were pretty homogenized. You know, everybody did everything.
Dave, say hi to your old friend.
Chuck, again, it's good to hear your voice. And I have to ask you about, you worked with some gentlemen I've been fortunate to work with over the years, in Jack Brickhouse, you mentioned Jack Rosenberg, one of the all-time greats, is still going strong, and it was inducted a year or two ago into the WGN Walk of Fame. But you worked on Night Beat, and going through college at Northwestern, I watched Night Beat every night. What an experience that had to be.
It was a lot of fun. Yes, the late night news TV news show had to do a wrap-up, and interestingly enough, of the day's events, and Carl Grayson was the announcer on that. He had a great voice. He couldn't ad-lib his name, but he had a great voice. And he hated sports. And, of course, being the wrap-up for the day, I ran a lot of sports on the news show. And Carl would kick names around, and he would come off the air afterwards. He said, "Why do we have to do all this sports?" I said, "Well, it's part of the day. Right. A lot of people listen to it."
Did you used to write the 1055 sports special on radio?
Yes, actually, I did for a while. Yeah.
Wow.
It's a pleasure to have you on. I don't know if you're going to be able to join us on Friday, but Chuck, you've seen more history than we ever have here, and I know Pierre-André co-hosted the 40th anniversary WGN special, which, what would that have been, 1966, maybe, something like that?
Somewhere in there, yes, right.
With Jack Brickhouse and Eddie Hubbard. Who is your, and obviously we're talking about Pierre-André here, but who is your favorite person to see in the hallways back in those days?
Well, I think Wally Phillips, because he was so quick, and he was always had a smile on his face and always was telling jokes. And he was just fun to be around. He was off the air much like he was on the air.
Is that right? Well, that's good to hear. I had a nice experience with Wally at the end of Wally's career, but certainly didn't know him back in the day. But that's great to hear, because there was no bigger radio star than Wally Phillips back in those days.
He used to take great delight in calling when I was in with the Cubs in spring training in Sarasota. Scottsdale, Arizona. He used to take great delight in calling me at this hour in Arizona, which is, of course, 5:30. In March, and get me out of bed. And the first thing he'd say before I had a chance to open my mouth, he's, "Remember, we're on the air live."
Well, you've had yourself quite an amazing career, sir, and I certainly appreciate you getting up to do this, if you're not already up at this hour. But, Mr. André, you served him well, and thanks for coming on and talking about him, too.
It was a lot of fun to watch him work. It was at the end of his career, but it was just a great pleasure to see somebody like that and be that close to him, and, you know, and realize that there was somebody who was you know, a legend in his mind, and I'm there standing there talking to him.
Yeah, it's pretty heady stuff for a kid.
Yep.
Thank you, sir. Hold the line if you would. And, you know, the interesting thing is, and one of the great things about WGN, among the many, and for all of us blessed to be here and to work here, is there is that history that goes back, and it's not going to be too far down the road where we're going to be able to say a century of history, where people can interlink the past with the present, and the type of radio they were doing back then, and throughout the entire thing, what's the one linkage? This place has always meant so much to the city of Chicago, and to the state of Illinois, and to the Midwest. Yeah. And it would have been cool, though, to go back then and just drop yourself into the hallways then and see what that must have been like here.
Yeah. Oh, my God, no kidding. Looking at those pictures is so cool.
Just what people wore, you know? Yeah. They were just so dressed up, and now look at us, you know, ripped jeans. It's like...
Oh, not Steve.
No, I'm in a tuxedo each morning. Yeah. Wally Phillips... And again, Wally was very nice to me, and you know, didn't have to know me from Adam, but he was very nice to me at the end of his career. And Wally, to me, is still the most amazing radio talent ever because of not just what he did on the air, where he was a huge star, but the work he did off the air to get that show on the air, and interlocking what he did with the 10 or 11 people he had to work with specifically every morning, the forward thinking he had to do. I don't want to get too deep in the weeds here. But all the commercials in the early days were played off records.
Yes.
So there was a record turner, a record person that had to put those, a union record person who had to put the records on, drop the needle on the record. There was also records for sound effects, along with a live sound effect person at one point in his career. Point being, You couldn't just get on and yap.
Right.
You had to have a plan, and you had to make that plan sound like the whole thing was ad-libbed. And it's pretty crazy how good he was at it.
As I think Marilyn Miller would tell you, when she produced for Wally for years, I always wondered, the story was Wally would go to a coffee shop up on the north side, not too far from Bradley Place. And those are the days when I was working the morning show with him. And he would go and have breakfast before he came to the station. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all I can do is grab the coffee, get in the car, and get to the studios. Sure. But I think a lot of that had to do with preparing himself for a show that was ahead with all these moving pieces,
yep.
as you talk about, Steve.
Right, right.
I mean, it's really remarkable.
Can I just add one thing, too? And on the air and off the air, the Neediest Kids Fund, I explained to someone the other day, someone very young who obviously didn't know, the Neediest Kid Fund, I would almost argue that he would had set the path for people doing charity work, you know, in our business. Off the air as well.
Well, yeah, and didn't am I right about this? Didn't the Neediest Kids Fund create the McCormick Tribune Foundation? Wasn't that the one too, or was the McCormick Foundation first?
I'm not sure the sequence, but they were certainly intertwined.
Yeah, the success of the McCormick Foundation, I think, is directly attributed to the Neediest Kids Fund.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks is the bottom line here. Thanks to you and your parents and your grandparents and everybody who's ever listened to this place. We could never thank you enough for that.